kitchen. There's fun to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid. Wait some. You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water, and you fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick.
And
you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. And a little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome
to
Mouthful. One country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Oh my God, it is the last Sunday of January 2012. How did that happen? And you know what that means? Maybe, if you've been paying attention and doing your homework, it is the night for the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association. Mouthful has a tradition. This is the fourth year that on this day, I feature wines. We take different themes. We've taken different themes over the 4 years, but I have with me once again, and it's so nice to say this, Carl Brandhorst, president of the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association, and David Barber, vice president of the same association, all actually looking very sated and content after a delicious luncheon at Ann Virgelli's house. And Ann is here, too. Welcome to Mouthful again, Annie.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Michelle.
Really lovely lunch. Lovely lunch. Lovely company. Just a very, very nice afternoon.
Thank you. People make the party. Thank you.
Absolutely. But the food helped a lot, too. The food was delicious. I lost count. I don't know how many courses it was. My guess is eight, but...
Yes, thank you.
Was I right? Was it eight?
It was eight.
Right on. Good instincts. And I didn't count. So anyway, we are...
Great to be here again.
It's really great to see you.
Great.
I remember you and I, Carl, we ran into each other at another fete a few months ago, and I did not recognize you. I recognized you, but it's like, I know him. But not from here. Where do I know him from? It's like, oh, right. So you'd come out for a Sonoma County event.
Correct.
I think it was the new Harvest Fair dinner sort of thing. So, yeah, that's the last time I saw you. That's right. That's right. Now it's all coming back to me. So we're going to taste eight wines tonight. Last year, did we do rosés?
We did rosés last year.
And the year before that, we did whites?
We did whites. And the year before that was just a variation, a blend of different whites and reds that we did, just showcasing some of the East Coast wineries.
Okay. Okay. And so we are going to do... the tasting, but what we're going to do first is we're just going to take a very, very brief musical interlude here and be back with all the wines to pour.
Hey, babe, what's in your eyes? I saw them flashing like airplane lights. Babe, that's for sure. Must come back for a little more. You got my heart, you got my soul, you got the silver, you got the gold, you got the diamond from the mine. Well, that's all right. Goodbye. feeling foolish, that's for sure. Just waiting here at your kitchen door.
Yes, indeed. We have silver, we have gold, we have best of category. We have 8 award-winning wines. And before you pour the first one, explain the competition.
It's the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Competition because we are the Atlantic Seaboard mm-hmm. Wine Association. Any of the 17 states touching the Atlantic Ocean, including Vermont, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, are eligible for our competition. And we do the competition every year. This is our 7th year. We just finished up this past July. And we had 564 wines entered from those 17 states. And from that, we do the gold, silver, bronze, medal winners. But then we also have best of category for the different categories of the wines and also best of show.
Great.
We have the best of show here this evening.
I can't wait. Was that one? I don't think that was one we tasted at lunch today, was it?
No, it was not.
You're saving it for a mouthful.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So what are we going to taste first?
Our first one is the Sauval Blanc from Barrel Oak Vineyards or Barrel Oak Winery. I keep forgetting it's Barrel Oak Wineries, B-O-W. They're very dog friendly, but it is in Virginia. And this is a Sauval Blanc.
And he's not just, he didn't mess up the word. It's not Sauvignon Blanc, it's Sauval. And that's spelled S-E-Y-V-A-L Blanc. It is in the winery's in Northern Virginia. There's 22 acres. And like Dave said, it is a very dog friendly
so winery.
They have low level tastings as well. Dog biscuits.
But it's usually just bowls of water for the dogs because uh-huh. they have problems negotiating their way home. But dogs are welcome. They have biscuits and everything
so
else.
So they will let them into the tasting
yes,
room.
Yes, indeed.
Right on.
And they're Barrel Oak Winery. On most of their labels, they have BOW and a paw print.
Oh, that's
dog
so,
enforced or
that's
dog
so
endorsed.
Cute. And here on this label, it's a pretty medium, not, yeah, about a kiwi green. Mm-hmm. And there's a picture of what looks like a lab. It's a screen, mm-hmm. not a picture, but a screen of what looks like a yellow lab. And there's this very beautiful tree. I don't know the variety.
Maybe an oak, since it is.
Oh, okay, different oak. Type mm-hmm. of oak. Yeah, that makes sense. It's just a different type of oak mm-hmm. than what we see here. And then it's got a dog looking up, possibly thinking that there's a squirrel up there in the tree.
We have lots of squirrels there. So.
Tell us about this grape.
Sauval Blanc is a French-American hybrid developed by the French, hybridizing, so it's a blend. One of the parents is a native Labrusca, that we think, because it's a hybrid of a hybrid of a hybrid, trying to get the flavors from the vinifera grapes and the hardiness of the Labrusca grapes, the Native American grapes.
So Labrusca's Native American.
Yes.
Vinifera
is the European.
Famous European wines
yes.
that really launched. I mean, there were grapevines planted in California.
Mm-hmm.
I think about 1820,
right.
But it wasn't really until the vinifera made its way here that...
Exactly, that things really took off.
Right.
And we tried the vinifera in the east, and it grows, but a lot of them, too, are not as cold winter hardy
right.
as we need because we have the colder weather,
mm-hmm.
where that's when the French started doing that. The French had problems with winters also, and they started hybridizing the grapes because they wanted more winter hardiness, more structure, but the finesse of the flavor... from a vinifera. Mm-hmm. So that's what they try and hybridize and get the best of both worlds, the hardiness of the vine and the flavors of the grape.
Mm-hmm. I had this at lunch.
Yes.
And it was quite nice then, and
yeah.
it's quite nice now.
Very light citrusy flavors mm-hmm. coming through, a lemon, anything with a seafood is marvelous, or just a light food to match mm-hmm. the crispness of the Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah. I find that these crisp, minerally, lemony, tart wines are just so food friendly. you know, it's a long, lifelong red wine drinker. I find myself drinking whites more and more these days. So
you have no trouble getting the acids on the East Coast.
No, and they're figuring it out here to some degree. I shouldn't say it that way. That didn't sound right. We have great acidic wines here as well, but I bet it's easier for you to have them, for you to keep those acids nice
yes,
and bright.
Because we have weather to ripen the grapes, but not as much to really over-ripen them.
Yeah.
So as you get the grapes sweeter, the acid takes off or drops down.
Right.
And unfortunately, we don't get that overly sweet. We still have maintained a nice acid balance in the ripe grapes.
Yeah. And I think for me, because I'm a Russian River Valley girl, I'm used to that as well, because we have those lovely, you know, foggy nights and foggy mornings, and that helps keep the acid.
Mm-hmm.
So do we know what the production on this is about? And I guess that part of what the underlying question, the sub-question is, what's the availability of barrel oak wines?
They are a relatively medium-sized winery. Okay. Unfortunately, most of the wineries that we're featuring today and in the East Coast are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And don't have a large production, and obviously
2,000 cases.
Yeah,
and obviously without a large production, there's not much distribution. Many of the wineries will distribute a tasting room at the winery and some local localities nearby, but not too much else.
Yeah. Well, but they'll ship to the states that allow
receiving.
And California does.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
There you go.
You can
get it here.
Yeah.
So again, that is Barrel Oak Winery, Saval Blanc 2010. It received a silver and also best of category.
Michelle, one thing I would like to add here as far as our website is concerned from the competition, that if they're interested in this, we list all the East Coast wineries that we're interested in targeting for our competition. And when the winery participates in the competition on our website, we highlight it. So all you have to do is go to the website.
A link to it.
A link to it. Just click on it and you go right to the winery website.
Great, and that's aswawines.org. But
that's
mouthful
correct.
Listeners are well trained. We give all contact information again at the just before the end of the show, so that people have time to. Oh gosh, I don't have a pencil. So you know, get your pencils, get your paper, or if you're on the computer, just get ready. We'll repeat the contact information before we say goodnight. So what's next?
Our next one is Delphos Winery. Delphos Winery is also in Virginia. It's owned by Claude Delphos, who's a former Frenchman moved in, and he has a lot of nice structure coming through. The particular one we have is Reserve d'Orient, which is a blend of grapes. It's a blend of Chardonnay, 74%, Viognier, 18%, and 18% Petit Mansang.
Now, there's something I don't know, Petit Mansang.
Petit Mansang is a grape from the southern, southwestern part of France. We grow it here in Virginia, and it's a very easy grape to grow, minimum disease problems, and you can make it either sweet or dry.
And this is a blend. You have the Chardonnay structure. Viognier is growing very well in Virginia also, giving you that aromatic coming through. Mm-hmm. And Petit Mansang has the aromatics also. Mm-hmm. So the blend of these three grapes makes it a very pleasant wine.
And this winery they're at the foot of the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Yes.
And that's sort of central, west central.
South of Charlottesville.
Okay.
But it's west central, yes.
Okay, and it's 90 acres. It is in its 12th year.
Mm-hmm. And just produces a lot of wines. Of course, the wines we're tasting now are samplings that won awards in our competition, but each of the wineries have many other varietals they do offer.
Now, I want somebody, I don't know if Annie wants to, Carl, any of you, I want you to describe this wine to me, because I want to see what you're... It's very interesting. The flavors are really interesting.
Annie, do you want to comment?
I think in the aroma, you get a real spicy aroma, and it's backed up with a little bit of butter. And then I think in the palate, you get many flavors, but nothing overrides each other. It really is balanced, and all of the flavors come together in real harmony.
I totally agree, but I also think that there is this thread, almost like a tapestry of caramel. Not real strong, not burned caramel.
Just a subtle underlying flavor.
Yeah, this just caramel running through the foundation that you don't encounter a lot.
Mm-hmm. It probably comes from the Petit Mansang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting. Very interesting. And again, this was it got a silver and best of category. And you have... you judge over 2 days, is that right?
Yes.
We have 20 judges?
We have 20 judges, and as I said, the 564 wines are judged in 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And along with that, it depends upon the best of categories and also the best of show is the final that all the judges do judge mm-hmm. the wines eligible for best of category or best of show.
Best of show, yeah.
And we try and get a mixture of judges from the East Coast
uh-huh.
and sometimes from California and sometimes uh-huh. the Midwest
uh-huh.
just so we get an even balance.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm going to have another sip and we're going to move on mm-hmm. to, is the next one the Riesling?
That's the Riesling. That's the best of show coming up. The Reserve Dorian is so nice because it is so, a lot of flavors coming through, a lot of fruitiness. The Viognier gives you that mm-hmm. structure, the Petit Mansang there. And even though Chardonnay is almost 75%, almost a varietal, if you will, it gives you that backbone of the Chardonnay structure.
But you would not, I would not,
you'd not
have this
Chardonnay.
Wine and say that this is a Chardonnay.
No, because it's not oaked, just slightly oaked in neutral barrels,
mm-hmm.
but it's playing on the fruitiness of the grapes coming
yeah.
through.
Yeah, and those the other characteristics, you
yes.
know, really dominate. And I'm noticing now, because there's that really long finish,
mm-hmm.
right near the end,
yeah.
the caramel has blown, for the most part, blown off. I can still sort of perceive it, but it's mostly yeah. blown off. Starting to see just very slight suggestions of jalapeno.
Okay. Just a
which
nice
is,
variety.
That's okay. I was drinking, what did I drink? Really recently. It was last week on Mouthful. I'm pretty sure it was a Benziger. So yeah, it was a Benziger Sauvignon Blanc. I forget which, there are so many wines, I forget which tier it was. It was a mouthful of jalapeno.
Oh, okay.
Not the heat, but
mm-hmm.
the flavor.
The flavors.
And that's a characteristic I just find really fascinating in a wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way the caramel then sort of resolves into some of those
mm-hmm.
very pretty green
a little
flavors.
Spiciness to green, yeah. That's, and that's what that's nice. Variety is a spice of life, giving you all the structure coming through.
Okay, and now it's time for the gold medal best of show.
And this is interesting. There's no cork in this one. It's packaged in Stelvin, which is the screw cap.
Mm-hmm.
And some wineries are doing that because
yeah.
it's easier to do. It's actually better for the wine because you're preserving it a little better. You're not worrying about the definite of the corkiness or the possibilities of bad cork taint or whatever.
Yeah, and if you're not, if it's not a wine that's built to put down for a long time,
exactly.
then you don't need to. You don't need to worry about yeah, the proper breathing.
It's actually a better closure than
uh-huh.
cork.
Yeah. For whites.
For whites.
For
and
whites.
Actually, some reds are doing that
for
because the Stelvin.
For the lighter. For
the Stelvins, yeah, they do uh-huh. have a little membrane in there,
uh-huh.
and it's designed to help the wine breathe over
oh.
a long period of time.
Okay.
So there's still a lot of research going on with the Stelvin
uh-huh. yeah.
screw cap, and depending upon, you can get a thinner membrane in there or a thicker one, depending how much breathing they do, the winemaker may want to have the wine breathe if they're using that for long term.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, thinking back to barrel oak, because they're so dog friendly, I think the wine industry so far has missed an opportunity. Train dogs to sniff out the bad corks. You know? I mean, we've got dogs that can, so apparently
yes.
dogs can diagnose cancer
mm-hmm.
by smell a very, very, very long time before it will be picked up by any other screening process.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get, what is it? You get like a ton of cork or something.
Yeah.
And what is it? It's something, what, 8%, 10% is going to have cork taint.
It's actually less than that.
Okay.
The cork industry has cleaned up direct
Good.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, well, there's going to be cork taint.
Mm-hmm.
Get your pup
get the
in,
dogs
there,
in there.
Get the cork taint out of there, you know, and slap that dog mm-hmm. on the label.
Get the dog approval before we bottle.
There you go. Okay, so now we are tasting best of show.
Mm-hmm. This is Martha Claire Vineyards in the Long Island on the Northern Fork, the old potato fields up there.
Yeah.
And in this case, does the name Entenmann mean anything to you?
Say that again.
Entenmann Bakeries.
Entenmann Bakeries?
Oh, Entenmann Bakeries.
This is Mr. Entenmann's winery.
Ah, okay. And tell me about the bakeries, because, you know, I'm a West Coast girl.
Danish breads and whatever distributed in the stores, Entenmann's done a lot of that.
Okay.
And have a very wide structure of a distribution of
okay.
doing them, and here too. So it ends it.
But and they're, is, in, they're on the North
on
Fork?
North Fork
where
of
on
Long
the North
Island.
Fork?
Sort of in the central part. North, you have Long Island is sort of on the east side. It splits out to North Fork
right.
and
South
Fork.
And I know North Fork better than I know South yeah. Fork.
Yes, that's more farms. It's more populated, the resorts on the mm-hmm. South Fork.
Right,
so
yeah. And it was just my daughter's
mm-hmm.
husband, my younger daughter's husband, is from South Hold.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so
right.
we actually went wine tasting.
Yes.
About a year
yes.
ago, mm-hmm. a year and a half ago when we were there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we went to Martha Claire.
Yeah. But this isn't a Riesling they have, just slightly off dry, but you'd get that typical Riesling flavor, a lot of peaches, apricots coming through, and that roundness coming, I think, from just that little bit of sweetness, but doesn't overpower
it. It's not, I'm usually put off by off dry.
This is still balanced.
This is nice.
You get a little bit of that petrol that you get in traditionally in Rieslings, like the German Rieslings. A little bit in the background, adds complexity.
And there's, it almost, not quite, but there's almost a little bit of frizzante, you know? It's a little the slightest effervescence.
And the bouncing acids just exemplify that, too.
So this is a really a lovely wine. You know, one thing I haven't asked you about, and I'd like to go back and do that, but let's go backwards with the with this one, the award winner. What does this retail for, about?
About $18, I believe.
$18? Okay. And then going backwards to the... Reserve Dorian. I wanted to say, yes, I got that right. Reserve Dorian.
It's about the same, maybe a little more. Most of the East Coast wines are going
to
be very reasonable. We'll run anywhere from 10, usually 15 to 25 max.
So the same with the
That may be a little lower.
They'll be a little lower.
A little lower?
Yeah.
Maybe what?
12 to 15.
Yeah. Okay. We have the variety of the wines there, but they're very reasonably priced, and it doesn't hurt your pocketbook to go with it. Now, obviously, some of the wineries are doing some premier wines, and yes, you'll find some $40, $50, but that's few and far between. Most of them are very reasonably priced for people to buy.
Yeah, I really like this. I can see why this was a real winner. This is an extraordinarily food-friendly wine.
Yes, yes.
You know, you like couscous. I immediately think, oh, this would be really nice with a whole variety of couscous.
And you have the couscous and then just finish it up by itself. It's nice as a dessert, too.
Yeah,
it's not sweet, but the fruit comes through.
Yeah, it's really, really lovely. Mm-hmm. Okay, next we are moving into a red territory, at least for a minute. And this one I'm actually not going to dump. I'm going to finish this one.
That's what always works out. Wine is meant to sip and enjoy.
And I should say, don't be alarmed. They're really small pours.
Next one we have here is Turtle Winery from New Jersey. A very small winery, about 5 acres, right out in the Cape May area. And they've entered our competition every year, and it's always done very well.
Actually, they do a lot of Italian-style varietals. What we're tasting right now is the Merlot.
Okay. Merlot. It got a gold.
Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of Nebbiolo, Sangiovese.
Oh, Nebbiolo. How does Nebbiolo do that?
It's very well. It's, again, there's not that many people do grow Nebbiolo. Tourist winery does. And it's just a matter of enjoying it. It's Turto Vineyards, but the brand name they use is Turis.
Turis?
T-U-R-I-S.
Oh, T-U-R-I-S. Okay. Mm-hmm. I thought you were saying tourist.
Yeah, no.
Tourist.
But they...
Because Nebbiolo, if I'm correct... Doesn't it mean of the fog or in the fog?
Nebbia, of the fog, correct. Yeah. A main red grape in the region of Piedmont in Italy.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm very curious about that. It's the Italian Nebbiolos. I'm very fond of them. If there's somebody, Annie, maybe you know, someone here is trying to do a Nebbiolo. Maybe one or two. I may think of it before the end of the hour. Somebody's trying to do Nebbiolo in Russian River, which makes sense since, you know, it's bathed in fog. Can't think who it is right now.
But this year you get the nice fruitiness coming through, the hint of cherry. Still has some tannins in there, but it's very pleasant. And again, with food, I think that it will balance it out a little bit.
I have to say, I'm really, really surprised by this wine. I've been off Merlots probably since I was assigned to the Merlot category at the Chronicle North Coast Wine Tasting a number of years ago. I might be wrong, but I think I was on the high-priced Merlots, not the low-priced Merlots, and that's the worst one to be because they're all masquerading as Cabernets. And we either tasted 150 or 300 that afternoon, and I wanted to die. And it was like I had little tiny elves in my mouth scrubbing my palate with Brillo pads. This is really beautiful.
Yes.
This is lovely.
Merlot has taken a bad rap lately because of that infamous movie, but a lot of people have come around.
I never saw the infamous. Didn't want to be polluted by that movie.
But a lot of people have gotten away from that, and all of a sudden some wineries have done some more nicer things with Merlot.
This is really gorgeous. This is one of the best Merlots I have tasted
in
a couple of... You know, Merlot used to be... if there was no Pinot Noir and no Côte d'Aron on a menu. I remember once I was stuck
Merlot's
in Kodiak.
A fallback.
I was stuck in Kodiak for the night because we had actually been in the plane and we were going around the mountain when the fog came in. Luckily, we did not hit the mountain, but the pilot turned around and all the many, many cases of Coca-Cola in the back of the plane started rattling. He landed in Kodiak, and I had to spend the night. I was going down to the south of Kodiak Island, and so I had many, many hours to spend, and I had dinner, and there was, you know, I drank Merlot all night, and it worked really well, but it's been a long time since they were that accessible. This is really gorgeous.
This is tourist Merlot from Cape May County in New Jersey.
In New Jersey. And on that note, I cannot resist taking a musical break.
And after 3 days of drinking with Davidoff, I just get an inkling to go on home. So I'm walking down Cold Harbor Lane, head hung low, 3 or 4 in the morning. The sun's coming up and the birds are out singing. I let myself into my pad, wind my way up that spiral staircase and stretch out nice on the Chesterfield. Pithecanthropus erectus already on the CD player, and I just push that remote button to sublimity and listen to the sweet sculptural rhythms of Charles Mingus and J.R. Monroe's and Jackie McLean, duet on those saxophones, and the sound makes its way out the window, mingling with the traffic noises outside, you know. All of a sudden I'm overcome by a feeling of brief mortality, 'cause I'm getting on in the world, coming up on 41 years, 41 stony gray steps towards the grave, you know, the box awaits its grisly load. Now I'm gonna be food for worms. And just like Charles Mingus wrote that beautiful piece of music epitaph for Eric Dolphy, I say, so long, Eric. So long, John Coltrane and Charles Mingus. So long, Duke Ellington and Lester Young. So long, Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald. So long, Jimmy Reed. So long, Muddy Waters. And so long, Howlin' Wolf. This morning, got yourself a gun. Your mama always said you'd be the chosen one. She said, you want a million, you got to burn the shine. But you were no longer a bad sign with the blue moon in your eyes. And you woke up this morning, all that love had gone. And fine, shake my body, moaning under a bad sign with a blue moon in your eyes. So sing it now.
Woke up this morning.
Down, load of both things ain't been the same since the blues walked in a town. Hey, but you want in a million, 'cause you got that shotgun shine. Shave my body, bone under a bad sign with a blue moon in your eyes. So sing it now.
Woke up this morning.
You got a blue moon.
Got a blue moon in your eyes.
So sad. Goddamn, goddamn, shave my body.
This morning, everything was gone by 10:30. Your head was going deep. news. Like some boys trying to tell you there's something you should know. Last night you was lying, but today is so low. In a time like these, makes you wonder if you'll ever know the meaning of things as they appear to the others. Wives, husbands, mothers, fathers, sisters, and brothers. Don't you wish you didn't function? Don't you wish you didn't think beyond the next paycheck and the next little thing? Will you do? So make up your mind to go on. Cause when you woke up this morning, everything you had was gone.
Woke up this morning.
Clearly, when I'm talking about a New Jersey wine, how can I not play that song? If you've been living under a rock for the last decade, that was, of course, the song used to open The Sopranos. Woke Up This Morning by A3, sometimes known as Alabama 3, but mostly known as A3, a Scottish band. Well, that Merlot is just really, really good, and it's from New Jersey, who would guess? And I should say, it's very small, just 5 acres. It opened in 2001. The winemaker is Sal. Of course his name is Sal. Of course, Sal
That's
Turdo.
Why so good?
A little bit more expensive, pricey, in the, what,
probably
low 20s?
Low to mid 20s. Mm-hmm. Low to mid 20s.
Low to mid 20s, okay. Now, now we're going to taste a wine. I'm willing to bet you have not heard of this varietal.
So
I have to say, Dave, you've gotten really good about knowing the sound effects of mouthful.
Yeah, that was a little weak cork pulling, but...
Yeah, sometimes that happens.
This is one of the wines you had at lunch today.
Yes.
The grape variety is a Chamberson. It actually means from Borderlow Vineyards, and this is Maryland, just the eastern shore of the Chesapeake Bay in Maryland. But it's a Chamberson grape. Chamberson,
Borderlow meaning water's edge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's border.
And O, E-A-U,
for water.
Edge of the water.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Chamberson is a grape variety. Chamberson is a French-American hybrid. It actually was developed by the French in the Loire Valley in the early 1900s when the French were trying to find hardier grapes to grow that tasted well and also produce more per vine. So we don't know exactly the parentage of the hybrid, but since it was in the Loire Valley and the red grape in dominant Loire is Cabernet Franc, chances are there's some Cabernet Franc in the lineage of this grape. But Chamberson was developed by the French, but also promoted very well in the eastern part of the United States with the rebirth of our industry in the 1970s and 1980s because it was very winter hardy and produced a lot and a very versatile grape. It can go into a rosé as we had last year. It can also go to a Beaujolais style red wine. And it can also be an oak aged.
Beaujolais style.
Light and fruity with no oak.
Light and fruity, right.
And it works very well because you notice a Chamberson, the dominant flavors are the cherries, some of the raspberries coming through. Mm-hmm. It sometimes will pick up some tobacco-like flavors, some spiciness and some leathers also. Sometimes you
can
find
licorice. Often when you find tobacco, I think that you find licorice root with that.
Exactly. And it just depends upon the soil. You know, the typical terroir, the soils and the climates. It will vary a little bit too.
Mm-hmm. But and this one, the winery is small, 10 acres. Mm-hmm. And again, it's from Maryland, Salisbury, Maryland, which is the southeastern shore of the Chesapeake.
On the eastern shore.
I'm going to bet, I haven't tasted it yet, except we tasted this at lunch, but that was different. crab cakes, perhaps.
It could, but usually with crab cakes, I'd want something a little lighter, a little white. This is a full-bodied red.
It is a full-bodied red,
but it could go
cupcakes,
with your spiciness.
Depending on what spice goes in, the Old Bay spice. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think this would go well with that.
Because there's still fruitiness in there,
but there
the richness and the tannins are still there, and
there's
the oak gives the complexity.
What is it?
Anyway. I find in this, and the thread that goes from the beginning to the end, is cranberry.
Okay.
I get the acid of the cranberry, the tartness, And I a very good food wine,
yeah,
but very good alone. You could easily get ready for your second glass. But I see the cranberry. I taste the
this
cranberry.
This was the one I kept this in my glass for a long time. You know, yeah. I had one glass for this, and then the other glass I was trying all the other wines. Yeah, the acid is very pretty. The cranberry is very pretty. Little tiny bit of not quite ripe pomegranate. Mm-hmm. There's something else right underneath that. Almost gamey.
I think that's the leathery flavors coming through. The leather,
that's the tobacco, a little bit of leathery.
Well, yeah, the tobacco's there. The licorice root is there, mm-hmm. but something almost like I haven't tried my little dachshund's dried duck treats,
but it smells like that. Might be
the aroma
of
that. Yes, duck jerky.
Okay,
that really concentrated gaminess that you have in duck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very nice. Go very well. And it, again, it's a nice food wine. It goes well with all the foods. You had a lot of flavors coming through. And that's the Chamberson grape.
Yeah. And it got best of category.
Best of category.
And the category was the
Chamberson,
varietal.
Chamberson.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But it only got a silver.
Yes.
That surprises me.
I know. Again, but this was in July, so it probably have improved a little bit since we judged it. A lot of times you don't know what the wine is. It's as you're pouring in the glass is what you're judging.
Sure.
Sometimes
it's,
wine is
absolutely
a living thing and continues to change. Yeah. So this may have improved very nicely.
Not just that, it was July.
Yes, middle of July.
If I were queen of the world, mm-hmm. I would make all wine judging take place from probably the beginning of December until the end of February when the weather's cooler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think depending on the climate, red wines might suffer during summer. I think red wines do suffer during summer tastings if it happens to be a hot summer.
Yes, and that's a whole controversial
thing. Yeah.
What is good, air conditioning, cellars, keep things well,
yeah.
But what is ideal? But then also, too, availability. Are red wines available then?
Yeah.
They may just be bottling the prior years.
Sure.
So they need a
sure.
little time after
yeah.
bottle shock to get through and everything else. So you can have an argument at any time of the year is ideal to be judging wines. But
that's a really good point.
Preferable is when you think it's the best.
Yeah. Okay, so that's
So that's the Chamberson from Borderlo Vineyards in Maryland. Getting ready for the next one. We have
I know there's cocoa in there. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Cocoa.
Our next wine is also from Maryland, but a little further up in the north central part of Maryland, and is a Cabernet Franc.
Cabernet Franc in the Mid-Atlantic regions, Michelle, is the one I think the red wine that we do the best.
Oh, really?
In the Pennsylvania, Virginia, North Carolina area.
Really? Interesting.
Yes.
And Cabernet Franc, Vinifera.
Yes.
Yes.
In fact, there have been some wine writers that have said Virginia varietal Cabernet Francs are the second best in the world, the first one being the Loire Valley in France.
Really?
And this is a couple years ago where California was doing some Cabernet Franc varietals, but not too many. A lot of Cabernet Franc is just blended together in a Bordeaux-style blend,
right.
A meritage. But Cabernet Franc is a varietal. It depends upon your soil, how it's grown, because sometimes it can be some herbaceousness in it. And I think we have learned our soils in the East don't provide that herbaceousness as much, but you have that little underlying just to give you some complexities, but not overpowering.
Mm-hmm.
You still get the fruit.
Okay, and this, it's a 24-acre winery founded mm-hmm. in 1983, so it's been a while,
mm-hmm.
around for a while. It's Elk Run Vineyards. They got a gold for this.
And it's, you know, they've been around. They've also been noted by other national award-winning competitions, and so this is one winery that does enter a lot of them. A lot of these are smaller wineries. Mm-hmm. Some send their wines out to the San Francisco Chronicle competition mm-hmm. or other competitions that feature the world. It just depends upon the business plan of the winery, what they plan to do. But their previous vintages have been very well received.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see. What vintage is this?
This is 2000. Nope. He doesn't.
Carl has the bottle.
He's bottled.
Yes.
The bottle search.
The bottle search. 2009. Mm-hmm. Okay. 2009 vintage.
2009.
On the Elk Run.
And what was the Chamberson?
The Chamberson was...
It's non-vintage. Although I believe it was the 2010 in the competition.
And what sort of price point do we have on the Chamberson?
I think the Chamberson is in low 20s.
Low 20s?
Yeah, high teens or low 20s. Around $20, give or take.
And what about the Cabernet Franc?
I would say in the same price range.
Same price range, okay.
Again, these are oak aged, so you have the wineries doing that expense for the oak barrels, and we all know oak costs, so we share the price.
Now, it's interesting here. You provided me the best notes. For Elk Run Vineyards, the land was a land grant from the King of England to Lord Baltimore. And the winemaker's home was built around 1756.
That is correct.
Still there.
Right?
Still there.
And does the winemaker is Fred Wilson? Does he live in that home?
Yes, he does.
He does. Oh God! Is it a stone house? A wood house?
Stone house.
Stone.
Oh. See, on the East Coast, we have history going back to the 1700s, and it's interesting.
Yeah.
If you go to Europe, you're sort of, wow, this goes back more than hundreds and hundreds of years, but we still have some things there that go back to the colonial age.
Yeah, for a born and bred California girl, I remember the first time that I was ever on the East Coast, and I wanted to fall on my knees and kiss the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I was just so enamored of the age, and it would be some time before I actually made it to Europe for any time.
Yeah.
But that sense of age on the East Coast,
yes,
if you are only from the West Coast, is really profound.
Yeah,
really profound.
And that's one of the history lessons too. As the colonials were coming over, the colonists were coming over. They came from different areas, and different sects came in different places. And Baltimore itself was the Calverts, who were Catholics, so that was a Catholic colony. Who go from there? Pennsylvania, Philadelphia is William Penn, the Quakers,
right.
And then, of course, Virginia, where the English coming through, who actually their search was for finding wine, and because they heard about Leif Erikson and all the vines there, and they came to do that, but they didn't find grapes that made too good wine, so they just continued on with other things. And, of course, the Pilgrims came up to Massachusetts, but they actually were heading to Virginia, but their supplies were getting low. They were running out of wheat and running out of ale, so they had to stop early and make some before winter came. So
interesting.
That's where the Pilgrims are north.
Yeah. And, you know, Lord Baltimore and the city of... I'm so remiss at not having one of the great songs written about Baltimore. I mean, there's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a magical place.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if it's a football team or a baseball team. I think it might be baseball. The Ravens?
No, they're football.
Oh, they're football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just, you know, you have Edgar Allan Poe.
Yes.
And all
yes.
these couple hundred years later, you have a football team that's named for...
The Ravens because
the Ravens.
Of their native son, Poe.
I just love it. I mean, and, you know, Poe, I mean, he's one of the greatest American writers ever. So I love all this history that underlies it.
He's buried in Baltimore in one of the cemeteries there, and every year there was a mysterious rose planted on his grave.
Right, yes. And there was just the anniversary of his birth was, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Something like that.
Very recently, because it was funny. A local winery was having an event, maybe a reading, and there was, he said, celebrating the 100th anniversary of Poe's birth. And I called him, I said, you need to revise your poster. You know, it wasn't 100 years ago, you know.
Yeah.
It was 200.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, he's just such a huge influence.
Yes, yes.
And it's one of the reasons I'm very fond of Baltimore. I don't know if that's silly, but it's a reason I'm very fond of Baltimore. And to read about this land grant is just, I mean, we have that here, too. I mean, we look to the various, you know, elements of history that we have here in Sonoma County.
Exactly.
And that, I mean, anything that goes into a wine, whether it's the soil, whether it's the fog, or whether it's the historical story.
How you have
it
a very, very strong history in the mission system, with all the wine that's associated with that.
Yes, absolutely. So, adding this Lord Baltimore element is really nice. And, you know, this is a very nice Cabernet Franc.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. We should say it got a gold.
Mm-hmm.
And the category, I assume, was Cabernet. You have a
variety. Cabernet Franc. And we had a lot of Cabernet Franc entries. I believe in Cabernet Franc, since we had so many entries and we had so many gold medals, we had to have what we call a taste-off. I think the three or four gold medals for the best of category. Unfortunately, this just stayed as a gold and did not receive best of category. And I forget exactly which was the best of category. But because the next wine, too, we have is another Cabernet Franc.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a really quick musical break here. You're on Mouthful, and it's because I have to sneeze. We'll be right back.
Well, if you get a nickel, I'll get a dime. We'll all go out and we'll buy some wine. Drinking wine, wine, wine. Drinking wine, wine, wine. Drinking wine, drinking wine. Drinking wine, wine, wine. Well, if you get a nickel, I'll get a quarter. We'll all go out with a farmer's daughter. Drinking wine, wine, wine. Drinking wine, wine, wine. Drinking wine, drinking wine. Drinking wine, wine. She drives a rod. She ain't good looking, but she's got a good rod. Drinking wine, wine, wine. Drinking wine, wine, wine. Drinking wine, drinking wine. Drinking wine, 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 wine. I'll get it on.
Yes, it is mouthful. Yes, it is our annual Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association tasting. What are we going to do next year? Will there be enough sparkling wines?
We'll try. Well, first of all, it depends how many people enter wines.
Okay, you had, what, 4 sparklings today?
At the luncheon, yes.
I only tasted 2.
Oh, you missed some.
You weren't drinking fast enough.
I had to do the show. I couldn't take a long nap. But the 2 that I tasted... Mm-hmm. Absolutely excellent. Mm-hmm. Really excellent.
We had the Scintilla, which is the proprietary name of Veritas.
Virginia.
From Virginia.
Okay, yes.
And that's a traditional Chardonnay Pinot blend. Mm-hmm. We also had, we started out with Celebre, which is Chateau Franc from the Finger Lakes, which is Constantine Franc's sparkling wine entry. Mm-hmm. And that was a rosé, which was very nice too. Mm-hmm.
That one I didn't have.
Okay. And that one very quickly. That was the first one we poured. Then we had Sparkling Point 2001 Brut, which Sparkling Point is from New York. And that was a very traditional Chardonnay. I think it was 55-45 blend of Chardonnay, Pinot Noir. But a lot of yeastiness, a lot of that traditional Methode Champenois. Mm-hmm. And then we had Wagner Winery from New York, which was a Sparkling Riesling.
Oh, okay.
They make a lot of Riesling in Wagner, being in New Finger Lakes. A lot of Riesling there. Mm-hmm. What else do you do with it? You can make a sparkling
wine.
Too.
A great idea. I'm a great advocate, and I think that the American public really needs more of an education. Sparkling wine is not to be withheld. No. You know, there is, on any given night of the week, there is no reason not to drink a sparkling wine. Do not save it for special occasions.
It's just another day that ends in Y. Why not celebrate it?
Exactly. Exactly. And I have this huge collection of sparkling wines because I was that way too. It's like, oh, you know, no one's with me tonight. You know, it's just me. I'm not going to. It's like, what? So I, at least once a week, I open a bottle of sparkling wine and it may take me 3 or 4 nights to drink it, but that's what I do. Anyway, what's next? Another
wine.
Cabernet Franc?
This is from Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania is. Grows, are they like the second largest producer of grapes in America?
Yes, they are the second largest growers of grapes, but they are the seventh largest wine producing
state.
What
do they do with a lot of their grapes?
Have you ever heard of Welsh's? They grow a lot of Concord grapes. The Concord grapes are grapes that they grow.
You know, I heard you talking about that today, and I thought you were talking about Welsh wine.
Oh.
I didn't hear the whole thing.
No, it's Welsh's.
So Welsh's.
Grape juice, grape jellies, grape jams, and that's your native Concord. It's interesting with Concord. A lot of, prior to Prohibition, Catawba, which is a Native American grape, was grown in New York and Pennsylvania. During Prohibition, the people really promoting prohibition said, we cannot have all these wine grapes planted here. Because Catawba, too, prior to the Civil War, Catawba was going to Ohio, making the largest wine-producing state in the nation prior to the Civil War in the early 1800s. But they had all these wine grapes growing in New York. The prohibitionists said, you can't have these wine grapes. So a lot of Catawba was pulled up and planted with Concord.
Okay.
They considered Concord a table grape. Although you can still make wine out of Concord.
Yes, you can. I don't know if I'd want to drink it, but...
Well, we'll have to bring you one, because you can find some nice dry Concords. Mm-hmm. You will still get that foxiness of a native Labrusca in there, but you do have some nice structure of a Concord also.
I'd love to try that next year. It's a deal.
We will. Okay.
Yeah, I have to say, I liked the previous Cabernet Franc better than this one. Mm-hmm. This one is Briar Valley Vineyards, 12 acres. It's young. This is only its sixth year.
Yes, yeah.
So it's fifth vintage.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
not, exactly.
Not even that.
And again, the climate, they haven't grown. As you say, the vines are younger, but it's also in Pennsylvania, which is in Bedford, Pennsylvania, the sort of the southern central area, and you have a higher elevation.
Yes, and you have a higher elevation.
So again, that would have something to do with the structure of the wine coming through.
Okay. And then we have one more wine, and before we go to that, while you are getting that open, I wanted to talk to Annie, because Annie, you host these gentlemen every year. You do a number of things with them. I know that you do a number of dinners. You set them up with Steve Garner's radio show on Saturday. Then you have this marvelous luncheon. There were 14 people there today. When you're planning your menu, how closely are you working with and thinking about these wines? Right on.
I think that the wines are very diverse, so I think that we put all the wines on the table. We had about a dozen wines on the table today, so I think we let the guests have the opportunity to taste different wines with various courses, so they can see what they like alone and what they like with certain courses. Mm-hmm. So I think when I make the menu, I'm thinking more of a balanced menu than I really am of the food and the wine, because they bring so many wines to the table. We had many courses, but we had more wine than food.
Right.
And so it's nice to be able to try the various courses with various wines.
Absolutely. And I think it was either the second or the third course. I think the second course
was a warm cabbage salad.
Exactly. And there were some people who were absolutely saying, try this white, try this white, try this white. And I absolutely thought that was a perfect red wine salad.
Oh, terrific.
In fact, I would have paid, you know, although we didn't taste it at lunch, that salad would have been magnificent with the Merlot that we tasted tonight.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was just curious about how you work, because I know you've been doing this for a number of years with these gentlemen, and I really appreciate you getting them here and, you know, letting me have a lunch on Sunday, which is so amazing.
Well, Ann is our West Coast representative, so she is on our board for Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association. Even though she's a Californian, we accept her as part of the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association.
I heard you say in one of the last wines you use that term foxy. What exactly does that mean?
Foxy is a term used to describe Native American grapes, the Labruscas. Venus Labrusca, which is your Concord, your Niagaras, that. And it's something that doesn't have to do with foxes. It doesn't smell like a fox or look like a fox. But the early colonists found all these native grapes growing in the Northeast. And at harvest in the fall, they saw the foxes coming around, standing on their hind legs, reaching up to get the grapes dangling from the vines. And the colonists saw these wines, and they said, the foxes like it. It must be a foxy grape. So that term has stuck. It's actually an anthonylate, which is a chemical compound in the grape that gives you that structure. It's one of those things, if you know what it is, you can pick it out, but it's hard to describe.
Sure.
It's sort of like biting on the little grape tendrils or the stem and pulling it through your teeth, the tendrils. It's that real grapey flavors coming through.
Is this the Barbera, or do I need to dump?
This is the Barbera.
Okay, this is the Barbera, and this is the last one. You know, we've only got like 3 minutes left on this show. So this Barbera is from the South Cape May area of New Jersey.
It's tourist winery, just like the Merlot.
Merlot. Yeah, and they're, again, small, 5 acres, opened in 2001, and this got... A gold.
Yes. And it's a Barbera, as I said.
For a Barbera, you know, it's really a very beautiful... Mm-hmm. It's not black. It's not inky like a lot of California Barberas can be.
Right. So you have the color coming through, the flavor profile, and think of any Italian foods.
Really
a lot of
nice
fruit coming through.
Mm-hmm. A lot of fruit. There's a lightness on the palate that's very pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Like you can drink it by itself if you're a true red wine lover,
absolutely.
Or it's a perfect match with foods.
Yeah,
the tannins are not
very
strong,
pretty.
But they're there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're there, but they're not aggressive. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not fuzzy, mm-hmm. you know, which I know is not a wine term that a lot of people use, but I do.
Yeah.
Tannins to me are sort of like the equivalent of static in your ear.
Yes.
They can be very, very fuzzy.
Exactly. I always described in my courses I teach about tannins. Well, do you know what a tannin is? Well, it's all that fuzziness that grows on your back teeth after you've got a big red wine.
Yes. If you drink too much and you go to bed without brushing your teeth and you mm-hmm. wake up and you touch the back of your teeth mm-hmm. with your tongue, that's fuzziness.
Mm-hmm.
When you were describing your 300 Merlots that you were tasting at that event earlier, that's fuzziness.
Yeah. And they didn't have roast beef.
Mm-hmm.
Or
olives,
butter, for
which
us.
Helps to cleanse your palate and soak up some of that. Because red
what
wine,
I heard was that tannins leach protein from your palate, and if you chew fatty roast beef mm-hmm. in between every few wines, it will replenish it.
Well, tannins help to tenderize meat. You don't
need
MSG or whatever. Yeah. Take your cheapest quality meat. Pour a bottle of wine, your hearty tannic wines, and let it roast and simmer all day, and you have the best meal you ever had.
And on that note, we are out of time here on Mouthful. Time flies when you're tasting good wines. Again, this has been an hour with the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association. We are tasting 8 of their top winners in their from their July tasting. We've had with us, thank you very much, Carl Brand,
pleasure to be here.
Brandhorst, president.
You got it right.
And David Barber, vice president, and you organize the tasting, and I know you work really mm-hmm. hard, and they're West Coast representative and very hardworking person who sets this up every year, and Vercelli, who also teaches at Santa Rosa Junior College and connected with Gusteau Bakery and all kinds of wonderful things, Annie, and I love your wine bottle pathway going up to your fans. I'm going to steal that idea. Mm-hmm. On that note, we're out of time. Have a great week. Make sure you visit at least one farmer's market and meet me back here next Sunday for another episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, my children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too, and he'll sing, to the Lord let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go.
Support for A Mouthful on KRCB-FM comes from the Tallman Hotel and Blue Wing Saloon Restaurant in Upper Lake. Located 30 minutes east of Ukiah off Highway 20, the Tallman is a 17-room country hotel with a bar, pool, spa, and meeting facilities. More information at tallmanhotel.com, or you can give them a call at area code 707-275-2244.
It's time.